Okay, we are starting today our journey through the Parshiot of Tazria and Metzora, which we're probably going to do the Shirim together throughout. At this point, we've gotten to Tazria and Metzora through a very specific journey. We started out in Parshat Shmini with the crossover of the Shekhinah coming into the Mishkan of the Datz Nadav and Avihu. We saw that there was some sort of crossing of boundaries there, and therefore the needing to establish boundaries and define those boundaries and understand what they are. And so the Kohanim became the ones to define those boundaries, to define those terms for themselves and then for Klal Yisrael. Lehavdil Bein, what are our four terms? Kodesh and Chol and Tameh and Tahor. And that the next part of the whole journey of Sefer Vayikra as part of Torah Kohanim is going to be for us to have a better understanding of what are the nature of Tum'ah and Tahara, and then Kodesh and Chol. And what we did last time is we began to define on one layer, we're going to deepen that today, what actually are Tum'ah and Tahara? What are they? What are their definitions? What do they do? How do they function? And we looked at the words themselves, and we saw that at the root of the word Tum'ah, relating to words like mitumtam, tumtum, atum, they are all the shonot of being closed off, unreceptive, that there are blockages in the system not allowing us to connect. As opposed to tahara, and we did that by replacing the tet with a tzadi, milashon tzadi hei resh, has a concept of clarity shining through, clear and free-flowing versus blocked up, covered up. Tameh versus tahor. And with those as our base definitions, which we'll develop today, we're now going to go forward on a journey to see what topics then emerge that are relating to these issues of Tum'ah and Tahara. Now that we know that these concepts exist, how do they manifest? Where do they manifest? How do they relate to them? How do they relate to us? And the end of Parshat Shmini, on the most external level, we dealt with Tum'ah and Tahara on the level of the whole second half of, say, of Parshat Shmini. Tum'ah and Tahara on the level of Kashrut or animals, external to us, animals. And now we're transitioning into Tazria and Metzora, which is dealing with Tum'ah and Tahara on what level? The human level. Moving into the realm of the human level. Now let's plot out Parshiot, Tazria, and Metzora and see what topics emerge within the context of the human level of Tum'ah and Tahara. So I know you've all read through this multiple times now because I put it in a lot of emails. I'm sure you know it backwards and forwards. If you need to, or you don't want to show off and you want to open up your Chumash book inside, it's totally fine. Open up to Parshat Tazria, and let's go through it together, and let's pull out what are the major topics that are happening here, that are coming up in Parshiot, Tazria, Metzora. What's the first one in the beginning of Parshat Tazria, which is the name of the Parsha? A what? The name of the Parsha. Mazet Tazria. What word is in there? Zera, what is this? Is that the word Sarat?
No.
No, so try again. Good, Yoledet. The Tum'ah Yoledet. That when a woman gives birth, the nature of the Tum'ah by a woman who gives birth, which is a totally fascinating concept, and we'll actually go back and address that today as well. Tum'ah by Yoledet, that when a woman gives birth, that there's a certain level of Tum'ah that comes about through that. Then we move into... Good. Now let's be more specific. We definitely enter into the realm of Sarad at that point, which we're going to talk about more next week. There is no Wednesday. I mean, there is one. Actually, in Queen's College, there is no Wednesday this week. They just kind of deleted it. It's Wednesday's a Friday. But next week we'll talk about Sarad more in depth. Let's break down the types of Sarad that we're talking about. What's the first type of Sarad? Where does it appear? What kind of Sarad are we talking about? On the skin. For the skin. Then we have Tzara'at on. Before then, what comes next?
The face.
Good. All still skin. Good. Good. Then we have hair. Then clothing. What's the nature of this progression? Right. Okay, we deal with saras on the yoledet and saras on the skin, the hair on the clothing, and that brings Parshat Tazria to a close. Then we turn to Parshat Mitzora. What's the distinction between, even on the level of Tzara'at, Tazria versus Mitzora? Because we dealt with so much Tzara'at over there in Tazria. And just like with Truma and Tetzaveh and Vayakam and Pakuda, even though they're all dealing with the Mishkan, they're dealing with two aspects of the Mishkan. If we have two Parshat about Tzara'at and there's a divider in between, it means that they must be dealing with two aspects of Tzara'at. What's the aspect of Tzara'at that's being dealt with primarily in Parshat Tazria versus the aspect of Tzara'at that's being dealt with primarily in Mitzora?
Purification.
Which one is which? Mitzora. Is the purification versus? Good, the affliction versus the purification. The Tum'ah versus the process of purifying from it. So what topics, that being an under just basic understanding as we travel through these parshiot, excellent, as we travel through these parshiot of what's happening, we move from Tazria to Mitzora, moving from Sarat as the affliction to the purification process, we still deal with different types of purification of Sarat. So the complicated process of exactly how it is that they're purified, which is fascinating in and of itself. What added element do we add in over here? Good, we had a house. Sarat on a bayit. Totally foreign concept that we have here. Sarat is somehow this thing which can, it's somehow relating to the body and the skin, but also it can relate to the clothing, it can also relate to the house. A house can get sarat. Whenever we have two parshiot, as we've seen in the past, as an aside, whether it's truma, tetzaveh, I only thought of this today, whether it's Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Pekude, Vayikra, Tzav, what's always, interestingly, the distinction between the two that we've always made? What is the fundamental distinction when you have these two grouped Parshiot? What is, here we're saying the distinction is between the it itself versus its purification process. Say it in even more fundamental terms, what is the distinction between the two? Same as
people that are
polite.
Like, they
have
minds, but
they're
the problem and solution.
I wouldn't say the Mishkan's the problem and the Big Dekuna are the solution. But though that would match more up with possibly Vayikra and Tzav as a parallel to Tazria and Mitzora. I see it on your face, you know what it is, yeah. Maybe it's just in my head. I could just make it up. Yeah?
How it applies to the person and, like, the Kohen?
I think that's the distinction. The general populace versus the Kohen. That's what I think, right? Meaning Truma is the Mishkan, the Gadol, and then we specifically focus in on the Kohanim. Vayikra is how everybody brings Korbanot, and then what do the Kohanim do with the Korbanot? And then, interestingly, here again, how do people get Tzara'at? And then who are the only people who can be Metaher and Mitzora? Only a Kohen. Only a Kohen can define if something is Tzara'at. The Tzara'at isn't Chal. It doesn't actually even truly take hold on a person, or in a space, or in a person in clothing, house, whatever it is, until the Kohen defines that as being what it is. It's not something which is purely physical. It takes a Kohen. It takes somebody whose whole goal in life is to be mavdil bein atameh uvein atahor, to tell what it is, who understands tuman tahara. You can bring somebody with tzara'at to the top-ranked dermatologist in the world. They can't define you. They can't define for you that you have tzara'at. Mary brings a beautiful proof to that. Where do we next see Tzara'at in the Torah? What's the story where Tzara'at comes up? In the next Sefer, in Sefer Bamidbar. By Miriam. So if you actually very quickly take a look, just a little bit off track, you take a look in Parshat Ba'alotcha, the very end of Parshat Ba'alotcha. Sukkim there even very beautifully indicate that. Bamidbar Perek Yud Bet. Pasuk So she's told she's going to get Tzara'at. Here. Look at the way the Pasuk Yud is phrased. V'ha'anan sar mi'ala ohel. So after God talks to Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, the cloud comes up. V'hinei Miriam mitzorat kashalik. Does she have Tzara'at? Seems like she does. And yet, second half of the Pasuk, Vayifen Aharon, then Aharon, who is a Kohen, turns around. Vayifen Aharon el Miriam, v'hinei mitzorat. Did she have it before or did she have it after? Right, well, so both. Meaning, on the one hand, she was afflicted with it beforehand, but what makes it v'hinei tzara'at is Aharon seeing it, and that distinction that comes from the Kohen defines that she has tzara'at. It's a beautiful diuk from Rabbi on the Pasuk. In any event, coming back to our topic here, I think that, as a side, it just interests me that whenever there are these divisions between similar parshiot, it seems to be the Am versus the Kohanim. Interesting. I don't know what to make of that yet. I just noticed it this morning that it keeps coming up again and again and again. But in any event. So, we have all these levels of tzara'at. Yoledet, and then different layers of tzara'at, skin, hair, clothing, bite. They move into a whole different realm of tum'ah. And there are four topics of tum'ah talked about in the conclusion of Parshat Mitzora. Starting from Perek Tetvav. First we have Azav. Then we have a Baal Keri, which is an abnormal situation of emission from a man versus a normal situation of emission from a man. Then we go to the issue of... We then go to an issue of... Mida, and then Zava. The normal situation of emission from a woman, and then the abnormal situation of emission from a woman. And that's our hierarchy. Yeah.
You didn't mean to put that Yoledet with a Tzara'at.
No, that was just me being imprecise. I even tried to group them to make it easier, but I failed. There we go. Yoledet, Tzara'at, Zav, Baal Keri, Nida, Zava. Presentation of Tum'ah and Tahara. Question is, what do we do with it? What does it mean? How does it work? Now we're going to take Tzara'at, ironically, out of the equation for the moment. It's the one that's most distant from us, the one that we have the most trouble with. The rest of these we at least have some concept of, some relationship to in real life. Some still apply to greater degrees and lesser degrees. Tzara'at is something that we just don't have the tools for practically. So the first thing to note that's interesting is that the unifying factor between all of these things, taking out Tzara'at for the moment, is that they seem to be tum'ah that's created by what? What's the one thing that's happening in all of these cases?
Some sort of death.
Oh, yeah, you jumped like 10 steps ahead of me. We have to catch up to you. We'll catch up. No, it's great. It's great. We'll catch up to you. Give us a minute. On a simple, basic level, on all of these situations, there is something that's coming out of the person. Even on the level of a yoledet. Woman gives birth, the child is inside, the child moves outside. The rest of these are emissions that come out of the body of a man or a woman. But there's something moving from the inside or out, inside to out. You pointed out that there is some other element at work here. Let's build to your element on top of that. Which is why I tried to make a hierarchy, and then I believe in a space at the top. What is actually all the way at the top of the chain? There's one type of tum'ah that is definitionally, for sure, unquestionably, 100% a tum'ah. Perhaps the most severe of all tum'ot. When I say perhaps, I'm being dramatic. It is actually the most severe of all tum'ot. And it only appears for whatever reason, which we'll get to next semester, in Sefer B'Midbar. But we're missing from this list the avi avot ha-tum'ah.
Tum'at
meit. A tumat mate is considered the avi, avot, hatum'ah. When something comes in contact with the corpse of a dead Jewish body, comes in contact with a dead Jewish body, that thing then becomes an avatuma. And then moving down, you get a rishon, sheni, etc. But everything starts from the avi avot hatuma, which again is interesting that it's not here. We'll have to figure out why the Torah wanted to save the issues of tumat mate for parshat chukat in Bamidbar. Food for thought, which we're not going to answer. But either way, this is the avi avot hatuma. Even thinking about the very phraseology of that, the avi avot hatuma, what does that imply? What do the words mean, literally?
Father of Tumah.
What does a father imply?
I feel like it's the big up there, like when you say father, it's the biggest, how legit, the most...
100%.
Yeah.
Even put it back into the words. Meaning, at what point does a man become a father? When he produces something. Meaning, this has to be at the top. This is at the top, as you point out, the top of the hierarchy, but also because all things then must, to a certain extent, stem from that source, reality of Tum'ah. That source, reality of Tum'ah. So somehow, Tum'ah has to relate in some way to mate, to death. On the flip side, what would that imply about Tahara? Somehow relating to life. There's somehow a life and death balance here between Tum'ah and Tahara, beyond just simply closed and open. But seemingly a question of, are you closed off to the source of life? Or are you opened up to the source of life? If you're closed off to the source of life, then you're existing in a state of tum'ah. If you're opened up to the source of life, if you're channeling life through you, then you're relating to a state of tahara. Opened up versus blocked, but in a whole different way. Many more layers there. And you find here that that's very much what's happening in all of these instances. The situations of Azav, Balkeri, Anida, Aziva, Anida, Azava, those are all situations. There are no judgments here, certainly not if Yoledet is going to be a part of that category. These are all situations where something is being emitted, where something is being removed from the system. And on all of these cases, what's being removed from the system is potential for life. A man becomes a Zav or a Balkeri, either the normal or abnormal way of becoming in that state, when they take their physical creative potential for life and it's no longer being used for life. As an aside, even when a husband and a wife are together, the husband still is technically required, should, not technically required, should go to the mikveh the next day, because anytime there's that kind of contact between a husband and a wife, the person should go to mikveh. Person should go to mikveh in terms of tumah and tahara. Why? It was all used for life. The goal was to create life. Doesn't matter. One piece of that reality can create life, but thousands of others of pieces of that reality can't create life, and definitionally will never create life, even when it's in its proper context. That's why it creates a reality of a balkeri, even when it's in the context of a husband and a wife. That's why, one of the reasons why Hasidim will go to mikveh every morning. They don't just go on those mornings, they go every morning. So they're always, make sure every day they're in a state of purity, they're in a state of tahara, because any time they could become in a state of tumah. So to buy a zav, from anida again, anida and azava, there's the potential for life that's there. It's not a judgment call, it's the fact that that potential has left. The potential for life no longer exists. The potential for life has exited. And so it creates a reality of Tum'ah. What's most fascinating is that that's true of Yoledetz as well. There is nothing more pure than a baby. There's nothing more pure than a child. While that child has a reality of life inside of the mother, both the mother and the child are in a state of purity. When the child comes out of the mother, the baby isn't tamei. Certainly, don't put a baby into a mikvah. The baby is fine. But the mother, who once had a reality of life inside of her, even though it needed to come out into the world, even though that's the natural state of being, again, these aren't judgments, these are facts. When the life leaves the mother, there's a void of life, there's a disconnect from chayim, and so a reality of tum'ah sets in, even by a yoledet. Even by a yoledet. When that void is created, in any case, tum'ah can come and fill it. Tum'ah can come and fill that space. That space of void, that sense of lacking, that sense that something's not there. And we, to a certain level, are even familiar with that, that it, meaning everything on a spiritual level should also reflect itself on a physical level. What do we call a parent who psychologically is struggling with the fact that they once had a child inside, and now they're actually struggling with the fact that it's no longer inside of them? They feel that void. We give it a term. Postpartum depression. There's a sense of that letdown, of that disconnect, of feeling down because there's a separation, because that's no longer a part of one's reality. It doesn't happen to everyone. I'm not trying to reduce tum'ah tara to psychology. And the Torah is not trying to either. But we even see reflections in the physical world where that's the case. And there are other expressions of that as well that in our context, unfortunately, we can't go into, that we'll leave as food for thought or for other, for you to investigate on your own. But that totally recasts what tum'ah and tara is. We started with a basic definition last time. Covered up versus flowing through, or being open to the light shining through, so to speak, being open to things shining through. And now we've added a whole other layer by examining what the Torah defines as being within these categories, as saying that tum'ah and tara are, whether or not there is that closed off or openness to life or death. Is there a removal of life, or is there a channeling of life? And the implication that once there is a removal of life, what inevitably will set in? Tum'ah. I think we're going to hold it there for today. It's a lot to take in. Process. Think about it. Take a look at this parsha again. You have a whole week. And then on Monday, let's see if we can dive into in a meaningful way, try to insert Sara'at into that context, since it's the one that sort of stands outside as being a little bit farther from the reaches of our understanding. We'll try to give it a context within this paradigm, within this framework. So be continued.